is the cause of his misery. Actually, the living entity should not have taken on a material body, but he has been awarded the material body for sense gratification. Therefore, I think it not befitting an intelligent man to involve himself again in the activities of sense gratification, by which he perpetually gets material bodies one after another. Purport Prashnapa. Begging, borrowing, and stealing to live for sense gratification is condemned in this verse because such consciousness leads one to a dark, hellish condition. The four sinful activities are illicit sex, meat-eating, intoxication, and gambling. These are the means by which one gets another material body that is full of miseries. And the Vedas, it is said, Asangohi Ayam Purusha, the living entity is not really connected with his material world, but due to his tendency to enjoy the material senses, he is put into the material condition. One should perfect his life by associating with devotees. He should not become further implicated in the material body. And the verse again. Nunam pramatta kurute vikarma yadindriya kritaya prinoti na sarumanya yata atmano yam asana piklesara sadeha. When a person considers sense gratification the aim of life, he certainly becomes mad after materialistic living and engages in all kinds of sinful activities. He does not know that due to his past misdeeds, he has already received a body which, although temporary, is the cause of his misery. Actually, the living entity should not have taken on a material body, but he has been awarded the material body for sense gratification. Therefore, I think it not befitting an intelligent man to involve himself again in the activities of sense gratification, by which he perpetually gets material bodies one after another. So this verse forms part of the instructions of big personality and incarnation of God. Rishabdi is giving his sons, as it's mentioned in the Bhagavatam, he had 100 sons. And all these 100 sons, they were all, they were not ordinary persons. Especially the leader of them, the oldest, Bharata Maharaj, this very exalted personality. And according to what Srila Prabhupada told us, that he actually is the, from him, the name Bharata Vasha comes. Planet Earth has received the name Bharata Vasha. Rishabdev is giving his very valuable instructions to his sons. And the scene is that he's instructing his sons in order to retire. It says in one of the verses that it's coming now. It says that one should not be a spiritual master, one should not be a demigod, one should not be a public leader or king, father or mother, if one is not able to free his dependents from death. So he's giving, so Rishabdev. So Rishabdev is, in this way, he's acting exemplary, giving his most valuable instructions to his sons, how to become free from death. This is the whole purpose of Vedic knowledge, that we achieve mukti, freedom from material nature, and not only that, but actually that we reestablish ourselves in our constitutional position, eternal constitutional position, as eternal servants of God. Here's a verse. Vidayi shavai nahima eva vidya vidanta kirveda vidya chaham. The first part says that it is me that should be known by the Vedas. And Srila Prabhupada used to say that Vedic culture means Krishna culture. In the end, we should know Krishna. And as Krishna says in the Bhagavad, janma karma chamidhiryam, janma karma chamidhiryam evam yudet vitatvata, jakvadiham puna janma naiti mamakiswaj. If one gets to know Krishna, one really knows Krishna, tatvata, in truth, as he is, then one becomes fully qualified to return back to Godhead. So that's the real secret of success. Krishna consciousness, that we have to somehow or other elevate ourselves to the platform of Krishna consciousness. And what does that mean? That actually means bhajant, that we should engage in service. Not just like it says in another verse in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, bahunam janmananti gyanavanam kabhajanti vasudeya samanti samanti. The real great souls are those who know Krishna. Prabhupada used to say, actually he says in one purport in the Bhagavad Gita, he says, the Mahatma refers to a person who has become great by surrendering to the greatest. Unless one becomes Mahatma, one remains Dura, cripple soul. So that's our condition, and that's what Rishabh is explaining in the verse. What does this crippled consciousness mean? That we are trying to exploit material nature for our sensitivity. Not knowing that this activity is actually complete bad. Just like it says here, that simply by this mentality, this madness, we are continuing our existence in the material world. Body after body we suffer. Krishna has qualified the material world as Dukalayam Ashashvatam. The material world is a place of misery, and everything is temporary. So, in other words, if we're trying to create a situation where we can be happy, we are in complete illusion. There's always, Prabhupada gave this very nice expression of the pin trick. I think it's an introduction of the Srimad Bhagavatam. He's explaining that no matter how advanced we are in science and technology and knowledge, whatever, material knowledge, there seems to always be like a pinprick that is disturbing us. Just like pin, isn't it a little thing of wood? When you walk with barefoot on the floor,
thorn.
Not exactly thorn. So when you walk on the bare floor, the wooden floor, sometimes you get some wooden
splinter.
A little splinter under your skin. Sometimes these splinters are so small that you cannot even see them. You go down and look for it, cut the skin, you don't find it. And then you forget about it, and after a while, when you're not prepared, or when you're not thinking of it, all of a sudden, there's the pain. You look for it, you can't find it again, and you forget it, and after a while again, there is it. So in the same way Srila Prabhupada used to call it this pit break. We are making our plans in the material world, and no matter how expert we are, there's always some disturbance. There's always some problem. Basically these three categories of suffering, klesha. The verse uses the word also kleshada. This life, material life, means kleshada. We're always suffering. Just like we know, there's three kinds of sufferings, kleshas. The first form of suffering is from our own body and mind. So we're always having experience in some kind of trouble. But somehow we've already got used to this trouble, so we don't give so much attention. Or when we hear, this is suffering, the material, or the body is the cause of suffering,
we don't give so much, I say, importance to it. Because we're already used to it. And the mind, the mind is always disturbed. Especially if we are situated in the lower modes of nature, the mind is very, it's always disturbed. And also the mind, that Krishna says the body, that's the source of so many useless desires, of lust, greed, anger, envy, all these very nice qualities come from our contaminated mind. And then suffering from other living entities. You might be very touched to somebody, to your wife, your husband, your children, your father, and all of a sudden some of them die, one of them dies, it creates unlimited pain in your heart. Especially when you live in places where there's more nature, naturally you experience all kinds of disturbance from other living entities, like insects and mosquitoes and this kind of. And then also disturbances from higher nature, supernatural powers, just like we are disturbed now by the snow. Maybe we already got used to it. We already got used to this disturbance. Actually, this snow is completely useless, isn't it? Just creating trouble. You have to get some tires, new tires, spend a lot of money for your car. And also you have to get proper housing and all that, especially when you see countries where there's more sun, there's more heat. You come over here and you see all these double windows and heating systems, and how much people have to pay for their heating system besides the rent. Actually, then they have problems with eruptions, inundations, and we are looking for them. It's not that we're making plans for suffering. Just like it says in Bhagavatam, these pains and pleasures, they just come. Just like the pleasures are coming sometimes, the pains are also coming without looking for them. So this is our troublesome existence in the material world. And this verse explains, Maharishi Shatnam is explaining, and they wish, or giving us the advice in the former verses, that we should be intelligent enough to solve the real problems of life. Srila Prabhupada used to say the real problems of life are not that we don't have enough money, that we don't have sufficient to eat or whatever, but our real problems are that we're taking births, that we have taken births, that we're getting old, diseased, and that we die. And as long as we don't work on these problems, all these other problems are just emanations, expansions of those problems. So these great personalities like Vishakdev, they're giving us the formula. How to solve the problems on the base. How to become free from birth and death. Something that is very little known in the Western countries, especially. The way you go to East, especially in India, the majority of people still have a concept that they're not the body, that there's life after death. But in the Western countries, people are more covered. And they have less culture, spiritual culture. So normally it's not known, it's not accepted as a fact that there's afterlife. Or they're also more and more forgetting that there might be God. Just like it says in the Srimad Bhagavatam in Kali Yuga, certain qualities are vanishing, diminishing very quickly. Tatashchanu dinam dharma. The first quality that's diminished, I mentioned the Bhagavatam, is religion, dharma. Tatashchanu dinam dharma. Satyam, the truthfulness, is also diminishing quickly, even though the Bhagavatam says, at the beginning of Kali Yuga, truthfulness is still there as the last leg of religion. But as far as we can see, religion is also, truthfulness is also diminishing very fast. Tatashchanu dinam dharma. Satyam, socham. Socham means cleanliness, purity. is also getting lost very quickly. That's Janamiram Dharma Satyam Socham Shama. Shama means tolerance. Kshama daya, mercy is also diminishing very fast. Why? Because everyone is becoming more and more egoistic, or like Rishabdi is explaining here, because everyone is becoming more and more maddened for the desire for sense feelings. And then it mentions three more qualities that are diminishing very quickly. Ayur balam shriti. Ayur means longevity. Life's becoming shorter and shorter. And even if people have more years, normally due to their sinful activities during their life, old age is very, very troublesome. So ayur balam and physical strength is also diminishing very quickly. For example, nowadays we see different diseases that are coming up that are practically destroying our defensive system, how do you say? Like our
immune system.
And Shmiti. Shmiti means memory, good memory. Our memory is diminishing like anything. Just like we can, even as devotees, we can, we're learning verses, and then when time comes, you use the verse, we've forgotten already. So very difficult. That's why foreseeing, like the Bhagavatam says, foreseeing these problems, great sages, great personalities have compiled the current on the Vedic knowledge for us, so we can read it regularly. Just like it says in Srimad Bhagavatam, Nityam Bhagavatam. Nityam Bhagavatam Sivaya. Bhagavatam says we should regularly hear the Bhagavatam. Regularly read the Bhagavatam. So we always remember. It's not that we chant Hare Krishna once, or we read the Bhagavatam only once, and that's it. In bygone ages, people would just hear once, and they would never forget. And they would be able not only to hear once and not forget, but they would also be able to give the same knowledge to the future generations without change. Great power. So all these qualities are diminishing very fast. Just like in the when Rishabdi was teaching his sons, they were all very high caliber, very great personalities. So nowadays people are not of the same caliber. They're diminishing very fast. Not just like the Bhagavatam says in Kali Yuga, practically everyone is born as a Shudra. Shudra means without qualities. The Bhagavad Gita mentions in the 18th chapter different qualities of the different varnas. It's mentioned that the Brahmanas are supposed to have 9 qualities. The Kshatriyas are supposed to have 7 qualities in order to function properly. The Vaishyas are supposed to have 3 qualities, and Shudras have only 1 quality, service to others. And just by serving others, they acquire whatever is needed. But on the other side, in the Bhagavad Gita, in Srimad Bhagavatam, there's amongst the predictions for the age of Kali, it also mentioned that people in this age of Kali become increasingly unfortunate because they depend too much on others. If these others were highly qualified, there were no problem. But the problem is nowadays, we're depending more and more on unqualified persons. That's a very nice thing that we can learn from Vedic culture. How the Brahmanas, or the higher classes, the Brahmanas, the Kshatriyas, and the Vaishyas, they were completely independent. Not completely, but they had independence. The higher they were situated in the society, apparently they had more independence. The Brahmanas, for example, were apparently completely free. They would see it under their honor, to accept money for their work. So in order to not become dependent on us, just like we see this very nice example of Chanakya Pandit, Chanakya Pandit. We know Srila Prabhupada quoted a lot of Chanakya Pandit. Prabhupada mentioned that these Chanakya Shlokas were common, knowledge, no, common knowledge that the children in his time would learn in school. So Chanakya Pandit was a very powerful personality under whose guidance King, what was his name? Very powerful king in India, freed India, the north of India, from the influence of the Greeks who had entered in India at that time. And it's mentioned that Chanakya Pandit, he's not even mentioned the Srimad Bhagavatam, was a very powerful, he was a prime minister of that king, Chandragupta, that's his name. And under his guidance, the king became very, very powerful. But Chanakya Pandit would not live a very, very austere life. He would not accept any money for him, as salary. He would live outside the palace, live a very simple life in a simple straw hut. And the king would come to take advice from Chanakya Pandit, coming by foot, paying obeisances to his prime minister, very anxious, very eager to receive his instructions. So there's a big difference between materialistic culture and Vedic culture. The closer persons were to God, the more they were realized, naturally they were respected. Not for their position, or for their money, or for their beauty, or whatever. People are respected nowadays, but for their developed consciousness, their Krishna consciousness, or their spiritual consciousness. So now it's very much different. In bygone times, people used to accept austerities, make long pilgrimages to holy places, to have the darshan of great personalities, to just hear from them, give them service. Nowadays, Normally, people are not so much interested anymore in holy places, churches, temples like that. Just like we have been traveling in Germany lately, temples are pretty deserted. Like a program, one guest come, two guests come. Very, very. So our mission is, that's why our mission is principally going out and distributing the knowledge everywhere. In the old ages, or in Vedic culture, people would be very respectful of the Brahmins. They would come and give them donations and make their obeisances, worship them. And as I said, except long or tapas, to travel to those places where these great sages were living. Nowadays, the sages, the small sages, the devotees, they have to travel and find out the conditions of souls and give them the mercy of Krishna. And that's our glorious mission. Actually, it's not a work. People think or conclude that we're working. What do you work? They ask us, what do you work? But it's not a work. It's actually voluntary service. And the more we engage in the service, the more we engage in devotional service, the more we become satisfied. The more we give, the more we become satisfied. The material world, the more you give, the less you have. That's why people also have a very difficult time to understand how service, how we do us, are doing service. Everyone wants to be free. Everyone wants to be served, and nobody wants to be or wants to serve. It's a completely, Krishna consciousness, spiritual culture is completely opposite to material culture. The more you become a servant, the more you serve your master, the more you satisfy the supreme master, the more satisfied you are. And the more you hold back, the more you keep for yourself, the more you harbor your sense gratification, your plans for sense gratification, the more troublesome your life becomes. And just like Rishabdev is saying in the verse here, not only in this life, but life continues. All misery continues. Life after life after life. Actually, the human form of life is a very, very special boom. Boom. What is it?
Boom.
Boom. Very special boom. No? You have the great opportunity, the great chance to solve your problems, your basic problems, once and for all. You can take advantage of all the, the spiritual blessings in advance, and the ultimate is to go back to God. Or you can become sophisticatedly entangled in the and not only that, but for many, 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 many lives, unlimited lives. It says in the human form of life, we are creating karma. In other forms, there's practically no karma. We're just reaping, how I say, no? Reaping our karma. Whereas in the human form of life, we're creating karma. We're creating karma, we also have the possibility to diminish karma, finish our karma, once and for all. So Vishabdev is very, giving very clear, and some of the verses it seems pretty harsh, pretty harsh the way he speaks. Srila Prabhupada commented on this chapter once, that this is actually a chapter meant for sannyasis. when he speaks to Bhartamars, he tells him that whatever sense certification, when one is aspiring for sense certification, that is the same sense certification as the eaters of stool, the hogs, that there's no difference. So that might be a little shocking, the language might be a little shocking sometimes. Because there's not so much flowery, I say. No, there's so much, not so much decoration there to make it more palatable. So these words, these great personalities like Rishabdev and others, are necessary. Srila Prabhupada used to say that we need these hard words in order to wake up from our slumber, from our material slumber. So the only way how we can hear these instructions is by associating with devotees, hearing from the devotees, just by hearing from the devotees, associating with devotees, we develop our faith. Just like somebody comes to the temple, hears about Krishna, sees Krishna, at first he develops some attachment, comes, his faith increases, and he becomes inspired to engage himself in devotional service, bhajan, and hearing, chanting, and all that. And his faith increases more and more and more and more. And once we have unflinching faith, just like it says in the Bhagavad Gita, Vishan Tondagatam Bhavam Chananam Punya Karanam Tidandva Mahabhukta Vachanti Mandrita Madhava. This Tridharata, this fixed, strong determination is of devotional service. It's not possible to develop for somebody who has his heart very impure, I say very dirty. One says in the Bhagavad Gita that unless one has purified his heart, one has acted piously in this life and in previous lives, and he has liberated himself from all the material contaminations, this dhritavata, this fixed determination for devotional service does not, I say,
take place.
Yeah, does not take place. So that's what we're eager for. So unless we are engaged properly in devotional service, we're following properly in the footsteps of our previous acharyas, following the instructions properly, we'll not be able to get purified. We'll not be able to achieve that fixed determination, Tritavata, which is necessary to advance swiftly in Krishna consciousness. That's why it's not, Krishna consciousness is not a, how you say, high flying, how you say? No, it's not in the clouds, it's not something, how you say, abstract. But it starts there when we act, when we live. Just like Prabhupada said, unless we are pure mind, no, pure in mind, we'll not be able to think of Krishna. And we can only be pure mind if all activities of sleep, eating, sleeping, mating and defending are pure. That means if we do not follow properly the principles of devotional service, we'll not be able to clarify, purify our mind. And when the mind is not purified, it's not clear, we cannot think clearly, properly, then we become unproductive in devotional service. So anyway, I want to stop here. Maybe there's some comments that some people in the audience want to make in respect to this verse or what I explained. Maybe there's some question, some comments.
First thing Prabhupada says, it is there.
So what was your question?
How to find balance about God in these circumstances, how to always remember Krishna, and on the other side, if there is some inconvenience for this, but we have to accept. So this is my question.
Probably a very nice answer once to this question. This was in the beginning of the movement when Prabhupada was living in New York and he was trying to get his green card for America. And he used to always go to an office, to the public office, and fill out forms and check on the process and the procedure. And he also used to take some samosa with him and give them to people. And then there was a lady who was becoming very frightful. She was very interested. Prabhupada started to preach to her. And then she asked him the question, now I am working in my office. And I cannot live like you, like a monk. So how can I practice this? And then Prabhupada said, just like before you go to office, you paint yourself, you put your hair properly, you dress yourself, you look in the mirror, if everything is properly, is properly done. And when you go to the office, you do your work, but you're always conscious how you look, aren't you? You're always conscious that you're not, that your hair's done properly, your appearance is proper. This was a very nice, instruction of Prabhupada gave. Understand how to maintain, just like also in the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna is telling Arjuna that he has to be Krishna conscious at the same time do his duty. And how to adjust things according to time, place, and circumstances. Well, that depends on good intelligence, isn't it? That's Prabhupada's definition of intelligence. The power to discriminate, to understand how to act properly according to time, place, and circumstances. And if you don't have that intelligence, then you should take it the help from somebody, or from others who have that intelligence. You should learn from others who are more experienced, more mature, to act according to time, place, and circumstances. What do you think of that answer?
That's very nice, thank you very much.
Didn't expect that. Maybe somebody else likes to come in there. Would you like to come in there?
Well, there was that instance where Prabhupada was in India, and before he came to America, and there wasn't much result. Now he could have said, like you said, you know, just accept the circumstance and just, you know, Krishna's arrangement. You know. But then he thought, no, maybe there's a better field to preach. So then he left, and then there was so much success in America.
Oh, now I understand. That's why. I didn't get the point. Now I understand the point. Because you were saying in the beginning that one should leave, right?
You said one should not leave the circumstance.
Yeah, not leave. Yeah, right.
But sometimes, if you use your intelligence, it's proper to leave. And Prabhupada, there's another example where a devotee was having some difficulty associating with another devotee. He was doing some service with another devotee. And he wrote Prabhupada and said, Prabhupada, I'm serving with this one devotee, but it's very difficult. He's a very difficult person to work with. And Prabhupada said, your service to Krishna is to tolerate that devotee.
Krishna put it there. Yeah, when one is a devotee for a while, one has plenty of experience, I think, isn't it?
Yeah.
Then one has to work with people that are not exactly congenial. How is it?
Congenial, yeah.
Congenial. Different modes. You know, sometimes we find ourselves doing service with somebody that we would have never worked associated with before becoming a devotee, isn't it? And one becomes a devotee when associated with so many characters, how do you say? No? They are different oil, you know, different characters. And one just has to learn how to tolerate these difficulties. But on the other side, Srila Prabhupada also responded to that once, especially to preaching. He mentioned that a preacher should be like a businessman. Wherever he can do business, he should go. If he can't do business that place, then he goes to some other place. Just like you mentioned, Prabhupada in India, in the beginning. There was not much, success, not much reception to Srila Prabhupada. Well, actually, it was instructions, guru, more or less, toward the West. And in the beginning, Prabhupada had very little success also in America for a whole year. It seems that he wasn't getting anywhere. He was just translating just. At least, no, he was translating his books. He was not really having much possibilities to preach. It mentions also Lilamita in the beginning, when he moved to New York, he used to live in Dr. Mishra's ashram. And we know from the Lilamita that after a while, Prabhupada and Dr. Mishra, they got a, how you say?
Clashed.
They got a clash because he was an impersonalist and Prabhupada was a personalist. So the devotee, Swami Lamita, has said that sometimes when they were going in the car and Prabhupada was sitting in the back with Dr. Mishra, there were heavy exchanges in Hindi. The devotees couldn't understand, but there were heavy clashes. It was all the clashes. And it went even up to the point that that Dr. Mishra forbade Prabhupada to preach in his ashram. I have told this many times, this anecdote, this story, that I met once, when I was in Finland, many years ago, we were preaching in the East, in the communist country. We used to go to Finland all the time, to Norway, Sweden, to collect for a program for preaching. And then we had made a friend in Helsinki. He was an Indian businessman. And he, we became friends with him. And we used to store our books and records and stuff there. And then go back to Poland and come back there. So once we came back from there, we went to his place. And there was an older Indian gentleman. He looked like a sadhu. Wasn't shaved, dressed in some kind of dhoti. So then we were introduced. He introduced him to us. And when he said that we were Hare Krishnas and disciples of Bhaktivedanta Swami, then he said, oh, I know you, Guru. And actually, when people speak like that, especially nowadays, we're a little suspicious. So we were also suspicious because, this is it's called history, so, you know. So we were suspicious. We were thinking, well, okay. So what? How did you know our guru? And then he came up with something very interesting. He said, well, many years ago, I used to live in New York in the Dr. Misha ashram, yoga ashram. And I met your guru there. And then we asked him, so what did, tell us something about Prabhupada. Yeah. And then he said, oh, he was a very good cook. Very good cook. And simply hearing that gave us so much, I say, you know, we felt so enlightened. Especially when we used to go to preach to these countries, sometimes for weeks we had no association with temples or devotees, we were just preaching underground. And sometimes we go in with wigs and, you know, was very, very, I say, very undercover. So when we went out, it was a kind of, I say, relax, and we tried to, I say, charge our batteries after that. Because you were traveling on Finland, there was also no temple at that time yet. So it, actually, you know, this was really very, you know, simply hearing that charged us, you know, recharged, enlightened us so much. And we had to see, you know, Prabhupada was cooking. They didn't allow him to preach, so he cooked. So he gave him prasad. Didn't become discouraged. Prabhupada never became discouraged. Just like this expression that Prabhupada gave us, the word impossible only exists in the dictionary of fools and rascals. Never, Prabhupada never accepted a no. He always went back. And Prabhupada himself commented on that. And he said, because I was enthusiastic, Utsaha. I was enthusiastic at the beginning. This movement started, I say, expanding. Started. There's a nice example also in regards to that. You know, Srila Prabhupada, it's a tape. Famous tape where Prabhupada speaks about his first days, first time he came to America. He said when he came down, and when the first time he saw the Americans, he thought that if I tell these people that they should follow the four rules and regulations, no meat, no fish, no illicit sex, and no gambling, they would probably say, please go home. Yeah? And then Prabhupada said something very important. And that shows us, you know, this determination from that. He said, let me try anyway. So this is our charging. We should follow in the footsteps. Srila Prabhupada ki. Any more questions? Comments? Most valuable comments? Vaishnavas?
Nothing? Huh? Do somebody find? Have you seen about it?
We talked about those before, angles, renunciation, purity, and truthfulness, and what's the fourth?
Mercy.
I have mercy, most mercifulness. Mm-hmm. How are those, in especially purity, how are those lived in former times, when they were still alive? How could you see that they were still alive? Like, for example, purity.
Mm-hmm. Are you even present?
How, yeah, but they were still present.
Where are you? You can see everything by qualities. Just by trusting him so much. Descriptions of what purity is, what a pure person is. What, for example, Kapila explains what the sadhu is. So many descriptions in the shastra.
Yeah. Is it at all possible to achieve this standard of purity that was...
Hopefully. There's only hope. Says that by following the footsteps of the great personalities, we can also achieve the blessings, topmost blessings. That's our only hope. We should be eager for these blessings. You've already been blessed, otherwise you wouldn't be sitting there. There's already some purity, some advancement in purity. You already developed some appreciation, some faith, some attachment. Otherwise you wouldn't be sitting there. Can you just continue? With faith. We should be patient. Enthusiastic, so many other qualities that Sri Rupa Goswami mentions. And in the end, you just be patient, in the end, just by Krishna's mercy, by the mercy of the spiritual master, the sadhus, you also become purified. What do you think?
That's a wonderful answer.
Wait. What would you say?
I wouldn't have done a better job myself.
Just continue. And you're doing nicely. It doesn't mean you're perfect, but you can still improve. But you're doing very nicely. Continue with the same enthusiasm, and the Munishin temple will again grow. Prabhupada used to say that purity is our strength. We just maintain ourselves pure, chanting 16 rounds every day at least, following the four rules, then we always have the strength necessary to continue. Enthusiasm, everything comes. So you just continue and be patient. Patience, very important. Sometimes we have no success, or we don't get the success that we expect. But stay with patience, we should continue. Says that, and Krishna consciousness is so wonderful that even though you have no success, just the effort itself gives you a result. In the material world, you always have to have a result. If you work and you don't get your money, your time is wasted. If you build a house and you don't put the roof on, it's useless. But in Krishna consciousness, the effort itself, the sustaining itself, gives you the result. And actually, Krishna is giving you the result. And if Krishna doesn't want, he doesn't give you for some purpose, provided you're doing your best. Yeah?
Schön, dass die ersten Schüler von Prabhupada vor ihrer Einbau gar nichts von den vier Prinzipien wussten. Und wenn, wie haben die auch reagiert?
Yeah, they heard it, man. Shortly before the initiation, it was in the beginning, but that power, I say, Schrauben angezogen. The beginning power was very liberal. But then after years, I remember, then once there was a letter circulated to all the temples. The Prabhupada said something very incredible. He said, now we have enough devotees. We don't need more devotees. Now we have to train those devotees. Now we have to boil the milk so it becomes very thick and sweet. We're not interested in diluting the milk. How do you say diluting? No. Diluting the milk. Diluting. Diluting the milk. Throwing more and more water to it. Interesting, huh? And Prabhupada also used to say, I could do these things, I could do certain things, you cannot. Like these, how you say these, don't make him, how you say, being merciful as Bhagavan was, with regards to initiation, things like that. After Vaishnavam, don't press us to accept more and more responsibility, fulfill our vows, I say. Sometimes Bhagavan answered letters, and especially of devotees who were administrators at the time. Sometimes Bhagavan wrote back, I can detect by the problems that you have that in your temple, devotees are not following the principles properly, are not chanting properly, they don't have proper spiritual programs. And it's a fact. I remember in Mayapur once, one of our GVCs, he was saying something very interesting. He's not actually GVC. He was a very senior man. I was giving him a class and he was saying that when we experience problems in our administration and we have to deal with people many times, these problems seem, I say, unmöglich zu lösen. I say,
impossible
to solve. But when we get to the root, we dig into the root of the problem, he said we always come into the same problem. The devotees are not following their four regulated principles properly, and they're not chanting their Ramas properly with a sufficient, I say, sincerity. Interesting point. And many times Prabhupada finished the letters that he wrote to disciples. It's when reads the letters, the letter book, that we published some years ago. Many letters Prabhupada ends with this phrase. And it didn't really matter who it was. Big devotees, small devotees, Prabhupada used to say, please chant your 16 rounds without fail, 16 rounds without fail. There was a typical expression of Prabhupada we put in there. And follow the four regulators' principles very strictly. And many times he said, by this you will have all the necessary strength to continue, more or less. So actually our Krishna Kona, our spiritual life is based on these principles. And if we're not careful with these principles, we cannot expect that if the base is not properly done, that everything based on that price and constructed on that base doesn't have a strong, how you say, foundation. Anyway, then, okay, at this point now. Oh,
with you. We're still working with you.
Anyway, so please continue.
When we're preaching, sometimes we meet a lot of people who find it difficult to accept the authority of the spiritual master, the scriptures. My question is it actually possible for people to make spiritual progress simply by prayer, meditation, or simply by heart?
Well, better to meditate than kill animals and all kinds of nasty things. So undoubtedly the mode of goodness is better than the other modes. So they're vegetarians and meditating and already taking interest in these spiritual things. They're undoubtedly better situated much better than people are not in that platform. But how many of us didn't accept in the beginning authority of the spiritual master and the shastra? And how did we overcome that? By association with devotees, wasn't it? By associating with devotees? By being, no, because that associate, that faith that devotees had was contagious. Contagious? No, like an infection. Uh-huh. So that's why, you know, the Sangha, the association is so important. You know, you're just nice to these people, you know, like you're preaching Austria now, isn't it? Yeah. If they have a difficult time, invite them to a nice feast, no feast, nice music, nice qualities. Devotees acting very nicely. And just by, like I mentioned, you know, by this, I develop appreciation, they develop attachment, and they accept more and more. It's not expected that one accepts everything immediately, especially nowadays. Wanting to accept authority is not so easy. People are trained to be, how you say, to challenge, you know, every authority, isn't it? So they should learn how to appreciate the qualities of the devotees, the gifts that the devotees are giving them, and actually they develop their faith and everything else. So that's why it says in the beginning there should be faith. So that means like faith in the persons, in the devotees also. They come and think, this is a nice person. I just had a tape of Bhagavad Gita. I was telling about a journey that he made, and on the same plane, it was in Australia, there was a Christian minister sitting on his side in the airplane. And that person was somehow Prabhupada mentioned that he was glorifying the devotees for their nice qualities. He didn't understand very much about the philosophy or appreciate the philosophy, whatever, or the religion, but he at least appreciated the qualities of the devotees. He said that your disciples are all very bright faced. So anyway, this is already, you know, advancement. He was already appreciating the devotees. So you should go on. Don't become discouraged. Yeah. Because just like he says in the Rishabdi, he was saying that people under the influence of the lower modes, you know, by the desire of the Sanskrit, they become mad. So they sometimes speak things that, you know, all kinds of things, they're not really conscious even of what they're saying. We should just insist and give them the mercy of Śrīla Prabhupāda, give them the mercy of Chaitanya Mahāprabhu. And be very, very patient with them. Just like the older devotees were patient with us, we should also be patient with them, the newcomers. And Prabhupada was so patient. I know a devotee, Sāgara Prabhupada, was preaching in Colombia, one of the very first devotees that came in New York to the temple. He was one of the very first ones. And he dealt with Prabhupada personally. Prabhupada took care of the person. He tried to encourage him to put on a dhoti personally. And his father came to the temple because he was so crazy at that time. He was a crazy hippie. And his father was coming to the temple taking advice or asking Prabhupada to help to correct her saying, to educate his son. And Prabhupada was so incredibly patient with that person. And then he left. He went back to his old habits. And after some years, he came back. And why did he come back? He told me personally he came back because he couldn't forget the affection. Are you saying? No, the care, the patience that Prabhupada had before. He could never find it anywhere else, so he just was always in his, how you say, in the background of his mind. So he came back. And also, from my personal experience, what I know is very important, I had the same experience when I came to the temple. That was the first time. I was also, I'm still, you know, very puffed up. So I was very, I couldn't accept what the devotees were telling me. I was just attracted to, you know, to the atmosphere and the pictures and this and that. And the persons who preached to us, they couldn't speak proper, they mixed the American and the German. And anyway, we didn't really want to hear from them because we knew, we thought we already knew this philosophy and this stuff. But they were so nice to us that even though we left for a couple of months, We couldn't forget how nicely they had treated us. And I remember when I came back to the Hamburg temple, it was a very small temple, it was the first temple in Germany. I opened the door, and there was this devotee, Shivananda, the first devotee who came in. And the first the thing he says was, "There he is!" I couldn't believe it. When you're out on the street, you know, you're just one more, you know. And I also had so many problems with my parents and this and that, and with the outside world. And I come to that place, and the person said, "There he is! Welcome!" And that actually broke, not broke my heart, but that kind of melted my heart. I didn't understand much of the philosophy yet. Well, actually, almost nothing. But just by receiving that nice treatment from these devotees, especially from that devotee, I was just, captured. So we should also learn that. Very important. That's also a very important aspect of Sri Prabhupada's personality. To be tolerant with others and strict with oneself. And not strict with others and tolerant with oneself. Very important. Okay, I think we come to the notorious ending point.
Moon, the Krishna students giving prasad, giving knowledge, giving association. And there's a saying in America, the eyes are the windows to the soul. Yeah, something like that, Jim. The eyes are the windows to the soul. Or the face of the index of the mind also.
Yeah, like in German I see that, I think they say the Augen sind die Fenster zur Seele.
What's that?
Windows of the soul.
Windows, same thing. Yeah. So if our desire, if our innermost desire is to give people Christian consciousness, then they pick up on this, they feel that this person is actually trying to help me. This person is actually compassionate. But if we go out there and we're attached to results, we're attached to a certain amount of Lakshmi, instead of seeing the purity of the soul, we see the dollar signs. This guy's trying to get something from me. And then he takes off. So our consciousness creates the atmosphere. Or we may be thinking, at this point, if I can sell this person a book, that'll increase my score. So we just see them as objects of increasing my score, or getting more luxury. Walking wallets. Now we should try very hard to see that they're souls, and they need Krishna. And if we have this this attitude, then it actually becomes very, very sweet. And they actually feel like I said earlier, like they're old friends. So this is a nice meditation. Krishna, as we continue on, we become more and more expert at it and able to handle different situations and able to understand and overcome difficulties. Sometimes when you're out on book distribution, immediately Krishna sends some tests. People won't take a book, or some demon will come up and harass us. Sometimes that happens as soon as you get out there, and just like, wow, I wasn't expecting that. But you gotta be when we go out on sankirtan, it's like we're prepared. It's like when a soldier goes out to war, and he's prepared. He's got armor on, and he's got weapons, and he's ready for battle. So when we go out on Sankirtan, we've got to be ready. Maya's out there, and she's heavy. This is Maya's kingdom, and it's super heavy out there. So our weapons are, of course, the association of devotees and holy name, and we have the books, and all this is also like armor to protect us, to hear and chant very nicely. This is actually protection against Maya. So when we go out there, you have to be ready right from the beginning. Sometimes Krishna just tests right from the beginning. And if you see it like that, you just just stand back and see, oh, Krishna's in control. No, I'm not in control. It's so important to see like that. Sometimes we're out there distributing books, and we try to control the situation, and we try to force it, stick the book in the belly, and do different maneuvers, and try different psychological tricks and this and that. But Krishna's in control, and we just have to go out there with that mood that Krishna, it's all to Krishna. In this way, it actually goes very, very smooth. Just amazing things happen if we have that mentality. So many people take books. It's like sometimes you're distributing. Of course, there's certain types of people that we know are very favorable for receiving books. So young people, students. In America, they have the soldiers. They've just gotten out of army and they're very humble. And the drill sergeants, they always take books. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. The sweetest guy on the planet. He's gotten beaten to death by the drill sergeant. But sometimes, there's none of those done. Sometimes those sweet people aren't there. We can't discriminate. We can't discriminate. We have to give this mercy to everyone. So sometimes when we're distributing books, we approach some businessman, some person that normally wouldn't approach. They got their $500 suit on, and every hair is completely placed perfectly. Sometimes those people are surprisingly very nice. I'm completely into yoga, meditation. Yeah, it's a great thing. And then they'll walk away and that guy was a sweetie. Sweetie means something nice. So you never know. You never know who is receptive to Krishna consciousness. It's like, especially I experience this, what I do. The way I've been distributing for the past 5 years is I set up a table at universities and I have a display of reincarnation, karma, and vegetarianism. Generally the way I used to distribute is to approach people. But this is like a setup so that people come up to me. It's amazing the types of people that come up to me and buy a book. At a university, mostly it's young people, sometimes they're not so receptive. Then an old person will walk by and go, oh, I've been looking for the Bhagavad Gita for years. I remember this was a few weeks ago, I was distributing, and the janitor came by. And he had his big trash can rolling it by, and he stopped in front of the display and, what's this all about? To him. Sure, I'll take one. Gave him $10 donation. Pulled out a bag, put the Bhagavad Gita in the bag, put it in the trash can. Didn't have anywhere else to put it. So that's a nice thing, actually, to set up a table. There's all kinds of people that normally we wouldn't even approach come up and take books. So that's a nice way to shoot books.
I want to hear from the book.
Another one.
source of life, inspiration for us, for me at least.
Yeah.
Or here from the Sangha.
Yeah, I also wonder. the whole year they're hearing from us. Now I want to hear from them.
Anybody like to say that?
I think you should just continue. It was really nectar. Yeah. It was just flowing so naturally.
Yeah. Now I'm embarrassed, Marjorie. How about we open up for questions? How's that? Any questions? Comments? Realizations? Pastimes? Yes.
Question. Usually after such a meeting, when it's always inspired, enthusiastic, and somehow purified, and one goes on the street and travels out, and then after a few days, one can observe that one always decreases. You know? And I asked you this already a little bit, but maybe you can explain more how we can maintain this purity, this enthusiasm that we not.
Actually, what I find is that as one continues, actually, especially after marathons are this, there's such an intense engagement of book distribution. Practically speaking, after each marathon, I notice my consciousness go another notch up, my realization. I mean, I'm sure all Sankirtan devotees know this, because it's real samadhi, it's real absorption.
But in later on, fourth.
Yeah, well, you have to. That's why this sadhana is so important. It's so important that we read Prabhupada's books every day before we go out, because this is what gives us the inspiration. Prabhupada is our inspiration for continuing on in this mission. And if we don't, just like in the Krishna book, it's mentioned that. If there's two villages and there's a path between the villages, then the path remains fresh as long as it's being used. But if it's not being used, then eventually it gets covered over by the weeds. So this is, it can't be emphasized enough, actually, that we have to hear and chant regularly in order to stay fixed in the mood of preaching Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, it just becomes very difficult. Especially the Bhagavad Gita is just, it's an ocean of inspiration. Krishna's preaching, hard and Prabhupada's. And second, there was one purport that said that a piece of gold, and there's a diamond. He said the diamond and the piece of gold were very attractive. The gold was compared to the pure devotee, and the diamond was compared to Krishna, very attractive. So this combination of the pure devotee and Krishna, a very wonderful combination. If we take very staunch shelter of Prabhupada's books, then we'll always be inspired. And we should read attentively. We read 5 minutes and then we fall asleep. That's our sadhana for the day. No, we should be very attentive. Get a little tired, take a little snap, but then we should make sure that it's very attentive hearing.
What happens if devotees you're traveling with starting to get into prajapa too much? How to stop it?
Oh, you just throw them out the van. No, I mean, well, prajapa is something that it's a very fine line, isn't it? Because devotees like a joke, isn't it? And it's just because we don't want to be dry. No, just talk Bhagavad Gita, just talk to Prabhupada. We also want to keep some. It's like Prabhupada also. Sometimes Prabhupada would be preaching and he wouldn't say anything about Krishna. some guest would come and he would just talk about, you know, where are you from, how you doing, he would just talk and joke. But as far as like going to movies and talking about, I mean, real nonsense things, yeah, so this person should be politely corrected. Otherwise, yeah, it's not good for the consciousness of the sanctan devotees if we get into talking about useless things. We should speak about our realizations, about book distribution, and read to one another. This is good association. And try to be an inspiration for other devotees. Someone else had a question?
Yeah, you spoke about we should have this vision that people were approaching our spirit souls and being Krishna's merciful to us. So sometimes, you know, maybe we're having a tough period during the day or something, so maybe we're getting a little tough at night and then you think, oh yeah, our spirit souls. Try to meditate on this and you try to see if this person is spirit soul, dissolve Krishna. But sometimes it's also that endeavor is kind of fruit.
It's also kind of like a technique sometimes.
Yeah.
I'll just think purely and then I'll get a result. Yeah, mine is very tricky. Very expert. Yeah, so we have to be very introspective. And it's very subtle. Mine is very subtle. But Krishna is more subtle. He's known as the most subtle. So, if we're strictly following the process, then we can notice that and pray to Krishna to become free of this, of our attachments. And man proposes and God disposes. If we actually want to please Krishna, then that'll be noticed. Krishna will reveal that to us. So the price to being an empowered book distributor is that we have to be sincerely anxious to help the conditioned souls receive this knowledge. Krishna Shanti Varana Himarabhavarti. That without the mercy of Krishna, one cannot have the potency to spread Krishna consciousness. So we have to very sincerely pray. Not just when we're on book distribution, one of the secrets to keeping good consciousness is that when you're not out on the front lines, when we're right back at the temple, we should maintain that consciousness, that sankirtan mood. We should pray to keep that mood. And we should, during Guru Puja, we should pray to Prabhupada, please empower me, please help me to be an instrument. We're playing when we're having Tulsi Puja. During Mangalarti, whenever we see some advanced devotee, we should pray for his blessings that we continue on and develop this proper sankirtan consciousness called sankirtan yoga, samadhi. And in this way, one actually becomes recognized by Krishna. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he said that one should not act in such a way that one wants to see God, but one should act in such a way that God wants to see the devotee. So, just like in the military, if someone does some courageous feat and he gets the Purple Heart or Medal of Honor, he's recognized within society. So, if we're out there preaching, we really get recognized by Krishna. It's probably the most safe position in the whole universe is to be on book distribution. Because this is the whole mood of our lives. Prabhupada said that he got new life when he would hear him sing. Prabhupada was just before he passed away, before he left this world. Just a short time before, he was being read the Sankirtan's course, and the boy was very, Tamal Krishna Maharaj was very slowly, carefully. Prabhupada wanted to hear everything, every detail, the small books, the big books, everything. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj was amazed at Prabhupada. In this condition, his solace was to hear the results of book distribution. So this is Prabhupada's heart. This is, nothing pleased him more. So, if we could somehow absorb our minds and hearts in this activity, can't imagine how fortunate we are. It's like Prabhupada said that if you simply chant 16 rounds a day and you follow the four regular principles, you'll go back to God. What to speak if we also distribute books throughout this lifetime? And there's so many Christians that we see them everywhere. You know, some of these guys are like 60 years old and they're out there pushing their pamphlets to people. So we can also do that. 60 years old, 70 years old, whatever. We have so much more to give. So much more to give. This knowledge is so valuable. So we should try to endeavor this way and shoot for it, you know. Give our life, why not? We've given our life to Maya for how many eons? Years, lifetimes. So why not just give this one life fully to Krishna? Can't imagine that.
You were mentioning that in order to get strength that we should try to get the blessings and the devotees, and also when we do guru puja, we should meditate more. So I noticed that in other parts of the world, what the devotees do is after they sing their prayers, they also hear the translation. Well, because many times devotees are just singing and they have no idea what they're singing. It's just a, you know, it's just a kind of, how you say, a ritual.
Right.
Yeah, but actually these songs by themselves are very, very meaningful and very deep. Just hearing them, you know, hearing the translation with the love strength.
Right. Yeah, during the morning program, when we're singing it, I meditate on the meaning. So it's very nice. Yeah. If you don't know the meaning.
Just the Guru Puja song.
It becomes mechanical.
It's so potent.
Oh, yeah.
So full of realizations. Not you.
I do have some more questions. Try to tell
them. You mentioned results and being attached to results, and sometimes we have experienced that some devotees, they, under the plea of not being attached to results, they may not distribute as much as they're capable of distributing, and they underestimate their potency.
That's called the mental platform.
Yeah. So, but also I'm wondering, and then also you see some devotees, you can see very clearly that they're not attached to results, but they may not be doing, you know, huge, like what we consider to be huge, you know, steady or doing what they can do. So how, to what extent is actually the day-to-day result we get in book distribution related to our consciousness, and to what extent is it actually even very important to get a huge result like that?
Well, it's not, actually. Of course, Prabhupada wanted, he wanted big results, but the most important thing is the proper consciousness on book distribution, because Krishna's not so much... Krishna's interested in how, in our mentality, in our consciousness, and our desires. You know, someone may do very big and then he's gone after a year or two or 2 months. Or, you know, Prabhupada said he's not interested in that. A shooting star. It's nice to see a shooting star. Prabhupada is just more a moon. And so we should be thinking of the long time dissolve rather than the short time.
Many times I catch myself thinking that, I don't want to go on book distribution, or better, I would go on Harinam. And I sense actually this feeling in many devotees, but one cannot force them. I think it would be very wrong. But anyway, I have a question also to Swamis. What would be the best way to encourage them to go on book distribution at least once a month?
I think the best encouragement would be to, well, first of all, to just give your own example by distributing these books. What is the proverb? That saying, example you teach?
Example is better than precept.
Example is better than precept. We can say so many things. But if one actually goes out himself, then that's already an example for others to possibly follow. And how to encourage the devotees. I always try to encourage at least the book distributors to associate, if possible, more with those devotees who do not distribute books on a regular basis. They should try to really freely associate. Otherwise, I noticed it might happen that those who distribute your Bhagavad books, it might develop a sort of elite consciousness, something like that. We are the chosen ones or whatever. That's also true in one sense. But at least I try to encourage more association with any type of devotee. And share the experience of book distribution, the nectar of book distribution, with other devotees. Explain to them what they experience. That yes, sometimes it's difficult, but other times it's also really nectar. Because I noticed that some devotees might, especially new devotees, they might feel sort of fear about book distribution. I cannot even imagine myself going out. But they talk to book distributors, what they really experience, how it is. Anyway, my point is more association. If possible, book distributors should not just give association out on the street to the non-devotees and then come back and just do their sadhana. But they should associate more with the temple devotees. And try and in some way by their own living book distribution to attract others to that preaching activity. It's not just some technique or something. It is actually preaching. Book distribution means preaching, nothing else. Whenever some other motivations creep into the mind, then it becomes difficult for the solution. It's a pure preaching activity. Whatever you distribute, any amount, just preach. A result will come automatically. If that motivation is there, I really want to deliver Krishna consciousness to the conditioned souls. A good basic understanding of Krishna consciousness must be there before attempting to go out and actually distribute these books. It requires great determination, mental strength, strengthen Krishna consciousness, otherwise it is very not easy. So good, as mentioned, sadhana has to be very, very good, very strong. Good basic training of Krishna consciousness must be there. And then that motivation, I want to preach, deliver Srila Prabhupada into the hands of the conditioned souls. As long as that motivation is there, I want to preach. Then result will come. Whenever the motivation changes, I also want to be on the top of the list or whatever, then, and it becomes difficult. At least after some period of time. So the motivation is very important. The temple devotees require the mercy of the book distributors. There should be programs arranged for more association, more conscious association. And then hopefully more other devotees will also pick up, accept that hopefully they also want to experience that, nectar of dissolution, whether one day in a week or 2 days or whatever, it's possible for them.
Were you asking for yourself?
You were asking for yourself? Or I should ask? Or for somebody else?
I better be quiet.
I sensed that. I was not very specific. I think it's a very important point to try to inspire, encourage any type of devotee, congregation members, and I always feel book distribution should increase in a natural way. That devotees by themselves, they should actually develop the desire, I want to go out. Not that you have to go out. Or we have a marathon now, everybody must go out, otherwise. Each devotee should develop himself that desire. I would like to go out. Then management, that's not the difficult part. To manage devotees who want to go out. And of course, unless you go out, it's difficult. It always remains, you push it in the front, tomorrow, next week. At one point, one has to go out. But the devotees can start in a very humble way, begin to distribute some leaflets, maybe some magazines, things which are not so difficult. And then just get into the mood or the experience of associating with the non-devotees on the street, approach them, or some prasadam distribution, something. Just get that experience. Then actually, after some time, you overcome that fear of approaching people on the street. You just give them something. And then at one point, you just replace your street or whatever you have, give with a book. Same activity. Any other questions? Yes, please.
Kann man sagen, dass CD-Verteilung auch Predigt ist?
Can one say it? I don't know how they say it in English, but eine beladene Frage.
Loaded question. Yes.
Loaded question.
Translate into English.
He's asking whether distribution of CDs is also, what is it?
Preaching.
If it's also preaching.
And I said, I'm saying that it's a, how do you say it?
Loaded
question. Isn't it? Because there's a lot of distributors of CDs out there who are not exactly preaching. So I would say that it depends also on... well, I noticed that sometimes it's not all the CD distribution is also not exactly transcendental sound vibration. Basically preaching means that we are expanding on the glories of the Supreme Person of Godhead, and that we are trying to attract the conditions towards the Krishna. And if we go out and distribute, you know, just to make a living or you know, whatever, and don't even give them transcendental sound vibration, then it's not exactly preaching. Hast du das verstanden alles?
Einigermaßen.
What do you say? You have more.
Well, there's letters where Prabhupada wrote that they were doing records. Even when Prabhupada was here.
Yeah, actually, this was written to German boys. These letters. Yeah, Prabhupada was blessing us. He was writing letters to Germany.
Oh.
Because our record distribution led us to a big catastrophe at that time. You know, we had a big card case and all that. Money was coming in, you know, tons of money were coming in. The devotees just innocently took all the money to the bank every day. Sometimes even without counting the money because it was so much. You know. So then finally, you know, the demons became aware of what was happening. You know, Hare Krishna, these weird guys are, you know, bringing having all the money. Where's the money coming from? So then, when Prabhupada found out about it, Prabhupada didn't know. At that time, our GBC had not tortured Prabhupada anymore. And he said about the amounts that we had, big quantity of money. And then Srila Prabhupada started, Prabhupada discovered that. You know, and then also, there were some complaints from the Swedish yatra at that time, I remember. Yeah. And then Prabhupada was making some very heavy statements about it. You remember that?
Yeah, I remember. I remember that Srila Prabhupada, he was not very enthusiastic about record distribution. At that time it used to be records. But that's the same as CDs nowadays. Same principle. He was not very enthusiastic about it.
I don't remember the exact words, but Prabhupada said something like, this record distribution has created havoc or something like that. Wasn't it? This record distribution has just created havoc. And Prabhupada was also emphasizing in his letters at that time that what made us famous were not the books, were not the records, but books. Oh, I remember Prabhupada said they hear the record, and then they think it's just some mundane music or something, because I don't understand. Whereas when they take a book, it's a completely, I don't know the word exactly, but you know? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm.
Substantial.
Yeah. And also, CD distribution can very easily turn into something completely mundane. Whereas when you distribute books, this is not the same, I say. It can't turn into something mundane that easily. I haven't seen it, but in South America, devotees used to collect their maintenance with incense and things like that, in paraphernalia. So some devotees in the temples would learn how to make incense, how to distribute incense. And when they would go away, they used to continue to distribute their incense, and they started to make a competition with the temple. Just like our painting sales also in the past, same thing. So many devotees became painting businessmen, how you say, painting sellers. But when you receive books, it's not. You're forced to maintain yourself Krishna conscious, otherwise the books won't get up, pull up, unless you maintain your purity. Say something.
Speaking very nicely, Maharaj.
Yeah, it can turn into something mundane very easily. Whereas when you're the super books, it's not the same thing. Say something. You're looking like you're agreeing.
Yeah, sure. Because I also was doing it at the temple. They said, now we have Lakshmi Marathon, we have to go out with the deeds, and after some time the devotees, the spiritual standard decreased, because I could do the same amount of cities like books in not so good consciousness. And then they left and left, and in the end was some devotees was left, others was still there. But then,
and then they start making their own cities.
Yeah. And also when Prabhupada wrote his letters, this was the distribution of Prabhupada records. And now, when Prabhupada wrote his letters in the past, this was distribution of Prabhupada records. Now we have techno and complete, but not even the Mahamantras on the CD. Complete. It has nothing to do with
it. Yeah, and all the big money was coming in. And it just created big havoc, big problems in that country.
Yeah, that was the big problem in America.
Yeah. In America, they got all these huge temples, and then the devotees burned out and left, and they were not even able to maintain the temples anymore.
Greed.
Huh?
Greed,
yeah.
Prabhupada said, you distribute books and everything will come.
What
you distribute books and everything you need will come.
There's many letters also, many comments of power. He says the book distribution is the best business. Best business. Huh?
More loaded questions.
More loaded questions.
Can one not stop the CD distribution?
Can we stop it?
We're not in charge.
Any other questions?
I have a question as to what you were saying about second kind of order speaking association to people who are living in the temple more regularly. I've heard a lot of Sankirtan devotees say that, especially in the situation here, that a lot of the temples in this area are not really, sometimes they don't even have a conception as to what the spiritual standard should be, and for the Sankirtan devotees to extend themselves in that direction often weakens them too much to the point where they can't even do their own service very nicely anymore. And so in this zone, there was some suggestions that Sankirtan devotees just be completely independent from temples like that. And I was wondering what exactly was Prabhupada's program to that, and how Sankirtan should be connected to the temples, and how Sankirtan devotees should work as part of the greater preaching structure.
Very cool. In the old days, how book distribution used to be to the temple spirit related to book
distribution. Well, first of all, Prabhupada wanted every devotee to work under some authority. That was Prabhupada's structure that he created. Everyone should work under some authority. That much for me.
Well, authority is also loaded these days. I think you can also add something. I just remember in the, you know, when Prabhupada was with us, that the Bhakti solution was not really a preaching activity preserved just for some section of a group of devotees, but it was a general all-pervading consciousness, a spirit inspiration. And I remember even during the Hainan, when we went on the Hainan, we always used to have some books with us. When we went shopping, we always used to have some books with us. Even when we just drove to the gas station, the devotee who did the temple shopping, it was a consciousness, an inspiration, which everybody experienced. Now, I think over the many years, devotees became specialized in book distribution. That, of course, has to be recognized and it has to be nurtured, inspired. If devotees are expert, it should be recognized and it should be facilitated. But it should not go on the expense of that, you know, all-pervading inspiration practically every devotee should have, as much as possible, to give out some books to the conditioned soul. So I feel perhaps over the many, many years, a section of devotees became specialized in book distribution, and you know, not on the expense, but other devotees just couldn't somehow, they felt a little bit perhaps left behind, and just took exclusively shelter in that particular service. If this could be revived, that all-pervading spirit and inspiration to give out Sri Srila Prabhupada's book. It's a very, very powerful experience. I always feel inspired by young devotees. When young devotees give their stories, you know, how they go out for the first time on book distribution, what they feel, what they experience, amazing things are happening. It's not just, you know, some activities, it's as mentioned before, you actually become recognized by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, by Srila Prabhupada, of course. It is not, it's a very, very special activity. To take that courage to actually go out and approach foreigners, even foreign people you don't even know, on the street and to approach them and give these books, it takes courage. And it requires intelligence also. Unfortunately, sometimes intelligent devotees, they sometimes tend to think, it is not really meant for me. Some simple brahmacharis, they can go out and... No, it's a real challenge for the intelligence. You really, literally have to tax your brain constantly. You know, how to give out these books? It's a challenge, especially for intelligent people. They should constantly meditate on how to make these books more available for the public. I was always thinking perhaps we should also get a little more into advertising. EBT could advertise more of these books. Advertise, you know, increase the public interest in these books. Actually, if you just stick to Prabhupada's formula, everything is there. He has given everything. Now, how to advertise Srila Prabhupada's books? This is by all the other activities Prabhupada, you know, projects and activities Prabhupada gave us. Like Hainan. This advertises Srila Prabhupada's books. They want to know, what are you doing? Okay, take a look. Everything is explained. Or public programs. We do public programs, people become interested. Again, you advertise the books. Lectures should always end with that, you know, notion, that note. If you want to know more, then you refer to the books. You just have to, you know, stick to what Prabhupada has given us. Everything is there. The book distribution has to be emphasized. other activities, preaching have to be, and everything has to cooperate. And that is very powerful. So I mean, I can imagine that the situation here is, you know, it's a specific situation. So I see it as an exception. You know, hopefully, you know, after some time, things in this yata can also, in a natural way, return back into the to the standard Srila Prabhupada established. And that is that, you know, all pervading inspiration to give out Srila Prabhupada. Let's just leave it up to a small section of devotees. Fanatic devotees. That's a preaching activity. And that's also, I mean, in one sense, yes, it is a fact, you just have to distribute these books. But again, you carefully have to, you know, watch our motivation. Even I have seen, even book distribution, it can slightly turn into, you know, fundraising project. Lakshmi will come, but that should not be the motivation to give out these books. If I distribute so and so many books, then so and so much Lakshmi will come. Imagine we do twice as much, then twice as much Lakshmi will come. If we have two marathons a year, we have twice the profit of one. If we do three marathons a year, then it turns into something else. We just have to preach. And then Krishna, you can send one person who gives the Lakshmi for, you know, 10-year marathons. If you want, he can do it. But if you're not pure enough, then why should Krishna send? We will use money for something else. I was sometimes thinking, you know, how much Lakshmi has been collected in these in these countries, you know, after so many years. 20, 25 years. Distributing, distributing. If you just sum up, it's unbelievable. So what is left? Where's all this Lakshmi gone? Where is it? Blowing away. Not much left. So that's why Krishna is careful. But the fact is, if we just preach, Krishna can supply whatever we need. It's no problem. And that should be carefully preserved in the book distribution mission. That pure preaching spirit. And if devotees don't bring back so much recital, I mean, it doesn't matter. Just go on teaching. Of course, some pushing has to be there also. Voluntary, nobody will do. Little pushing has to be there. But in a very, very, you know, very Krishna conscious way. We want to push preaching, not push recital. That push everybody should feel. We should preach. It's a preaching movement. We should try to push the preaching, not the recital. Push the preaching. It's 7 o'clock is out here? Yeah, I thought.
No.
Oh, no.
No, it's
okay. Seven.
Yeah, I just wanted to, if I may, say something, add something to what Maharaj said. That I remember in the beginning days in Germany also, I mean, all over the world, but because we participated here in Germany. So our movement was a preaching mission. It was so obvious. Everyone was going out. And actually nobody stayed back in the temple besides only the pujari and, you know, some sick people. And, you know, everyone went out. When I joined, first time Prabhupada had been in, you know, when Prabhupada came to Hamburg the first time, he was instructing us to just preach. And then we, somehow devotees started to pick up jobs and things like that. And when Prabhupada heard about that, well, there was some problem here in Hamburg, I remember, that we had created a debt. So the president decided now there's no way to pay the debt except for everyone goes to outer work. And we all had to get jobs.
And then I got a job in a factory where they make these toilet things, you know, these toilet...
Paper?
No, these are to sit on. And we were shifting them around. Somebody else was going somewhere else to do... Somebody sold some newspapers even.
Hazaru wanted to send us into the cigarette factory.
Yeah, and all kinds of things. So then Prabhupada heard about it, and Prabhupada sent us a letter, and he said, stop this immediately. Who told you not to send Hazaru? He was our GVC, our temple president. So he told Prabhupada, very angry, why? How is it possible? You send our devotees to work in the factory, the cigarette factory, something like that. Immediately everyone should go on Harinam and chant Hare Krishna and preach. So then everything was stopped. And we went out, we had about 10,000 marks debt. For us it was an astronomical number at that time. Now it's not so much. So we all went out, and after a short while, you know, a person comes to the temple, he was an Italian, remember? He was an Italian. Yeah, he came to the temple, and he said, I want to surrender, I want to become a devotee. So we said, okay, you come in. And then he revealed to us, and I have a bank account, and I have 8,000, I want to give that immediately. Remember that? For us it was just incredible, huh? We had just followed Srila Prabhupada's instruction. Immediately somebody comes in the door and gives us almost the whole debt. And then on the basis of that, we would go out every day, morning to midday, and then in the afternoon, we went out. And on Saturday, we used to go out three times a day. And our Sankirtan was not books, there was no books. We only had a few pamphlets or we had some magazines, some very simple Back to God, Zotzogottheit, some stapled magazines. And we went out with baskets, you know, 20 minutes, one group was chanting, and the other one was going around with the baskets, distributing invitations like that. We were shifting all the time. And on Saturdays, we used to go out three times. That means on Saturday night, we used to go on Riverbahn. Riverbahn is probably the most famous street in Germany. Yeah, nightclub. Green light area, Hamburg. Red light. and we used to go out and chant. Up and down Riverbahn. And sometimes when we were valiant, we would even go into the small streets, you know, the more red light. And it was just blissful, you know. Sometimes somebody dropped a flower pot, or the guys were in front of the nightclubs, they would shoot cigarettes at us. And that was our life. Our life was on the street. It was on the street. I remember, you know, our temple president. Sometimes he used to carry a typewriter with him, you know. In his correspondence, you know, and we would just sit down on the street, we would chant, and he would do his correspondence right there. just to be out on the street and taste this, everything was going on in the street. We only had our program on Sundays. We had our Sunday program, but it was always our preaching, and the temple president was sitting right at the entrance. There was a little door, entrance where people used to put their shoes, and then he used to come in, and there was immediately the desk of the temple president, a low desk, you know, and he would sit there and wait until people came in to preach to them, like Peter, you know. Peter has the same mood. So he used to preach to them, and sometimes he used to preach for hours. And this way we all became devotees. All the new devotees, they just, you know, by this preaching spirit that became attractive. And as soon as somebody joined, he would immediately go on the street with the Harinam party. There was no Bhakta program, you know, like everyone gets kind of training. This is good also, but we shouldn't let ourselves to become too sophisticated. Sometimes when there's too much sophistication, the spirit gets lost, the preaching spirit gets lost. And it was just adventurous. Preaching was so adventurous that, preaching, go down with books, is so adventurous. Every day there's some new adventure. Everyone is different and so many situations. I remember we were chanting in Hamburg on one street, and especially we always ended up in front of the same bank. So after a while, the people from the bank, they complained. Because always with their cartas, ching, 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 and the tanga and everything. And they were just sitting there, quietly. So they couldn't stand, so they complained. So they called the police. And the police said, okay, no instruments. Remember that incident? No instruments. So then we continued without instruments, just clapping. Then again they complained. So the police came again. So they said, no clapping, no singing. So we all get our beat back and we're chanting. We were standing in line, like this. And then the police came again and said, And they took us to the police. They took us to the police station. And they couldn't deal with us. At that time, Hare Krishna wasn't known at all. Just in Hamburg, a very few spots. And so when we went somewhere distributing books or doing Harinam, most of the police didn't know how to deal with us. They couldn't figure it out because we didn't fit in any laws or anything like that. And after a while they started making their laws. Especially to control us. I remember we used to travel in Germany. We used to have a temple in München here, the first temple. And we used to do our excursions here in Bavaria and Austria like that. And then after a while we found out the best places to stay overnight were the churches and the monasteries. Remember that time?
Yes.
And we would at night, we would all stay and go to the priest, knock on his door and say, good evening. We monks, we have been preaching the glories of God all day in your city. Could you please give us a shelter for the night? Remember that? And they would just be like, they couldn't say no because they had the same mission more or less. So they usually let us in and then used to talk with us for a while. And normally they were very impressed with our mission and our enthusiasm and our knowledge about God and this and that. And many times the priest would even give us a donation. Or they would have a lady who would clean the church or something, make a milk for us. And sometimes the priest would even take us to his school where he would teach about religion. And would take us to the school and use us as examples for how religious young people could be to convince their own pupils. Or I remember we went to a monastery, I think it was in Austria somewhere, and we came to that monastery. And so we were also let in, we did the same mantra, no? Stupid in love of God. So I remember we came into the monastery, and they were all very old monks. And they had a bhakta. They call them novice. Novice? Bhaktas? A person, young person comes to study, to experience life in the monastery. Anyway, so we started preaching. And they all became very impressed by our philosophy, isn't it? And especially the bhakta. I remember they very, very politely took him, to some other place so he wouldn't be convinced by us. And besides that, Normally all the monks and all the church people, they used to buy our books. There would always be the donation, we always give them books. Until at one point, the church found out about this. They found out about these strange monks. And they sent a letter to all the monasteries and all the churches, explaining that we were not on the same line.
Remember that?
No.
And from that day on, they all of a sudden, when we knocked on the doors of the church, they said, you are the, we know about you. This is a trick or something like that. And the same happened with the police also. We used to travel to a Sangitan, and they had no idea how to deal with us. They didn't know how to fit us in. Until they got letters from some central police office. Explaining, who we were, what we're doing, how to deal with us. Anyway, I don't know how I got into this. These were the beginning days in Germany.
Life was on the street.
Yeah, life was on the street. Life was on the street. And we had in the beginning we had no books, we had no literature, and our Sankirtan was chanting. Chanting and chanting and chanting and chanting, all morning, midday, back to the temple, take the prasad, go out again. And we used to, in Hamburg, we used to, always move up, Mönckebergstrasse, up and down and up and down. We were famous like bunte Hunde. Everyone knew us. We became so famous. Nowadays, sometimes when I travel, I meet people who say, "What? Hare Krishna, you're still there? Where are you now?" At the time when we were dancing and doing all this, many times we had problems with people or they're laughing at us. But I noticed after years, especially I have a nice, very nice experience. I had a very nice experience just short, some year ago or something, or longer, 2 years ago in München. When Arjuna was making an investigation, he was compiling the history of the München Yatra. So, and he asked me for help, to show him the houses where we had been before, and the history and that. And so, I remember we went to one place where we had a temple in Oberschleißheim, second temple. And we had a house, and there was a bakery in front of the bakery, in front of the temple. Remember that? The bakery in front of the... Anyway, so we went there, we couldn't find the place. Because it was all like kind of change, and new houses being built, and trees were, all changed, the scene was changed. So we look around, we weren't sure, and then all of a sudden I discover, this might be the bakery from before, but it was all covered with trees. So we asked. We rang on the bell door, the doorbell, I said, "Doorbell." And a very old lady comes out and says, "Ah, we saw my dhoti." "Okay, sure." And she said, "Yeah, I remember you very well. It was very nice when you were here. Every morning when we hear you sing, ching, ching, ching." And then she said, "And after you left, this was, there was not the same. This was not the same." And then she said, told me something else very nice. She said, "And then after you gone away, I spent some holidays in Italy with my husband on some beach. And all of a sudden, a young boy comes, one of you people come and gave me a book, one of Zimmer book. And it was one of the devotees that was living with you there, this Durgama. And it